On today's episode of Locked On Nets, we finally have new stuff to talk about. We have the Brooklyn Nets schedule being announced along with the rest of the league. And of course, the big news about Joe Tsai purchasing the other 51% of the Nets. We talk through that and the legacy of Mikhail Prokhorov in his decade as Nets owner. Coming up.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your tried and true host, Josh Bass, a lifelong fan of your Brooklyn Nets. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, my partner in crime, my future travel buddy in a couple weeks, Marcus Verihal. Marcus, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Josh. We're getting close to that trip. It's just a couple weeks away. Happy to be back on the pod with you and looking forward to those on the road pods once we get going.
Yeah, I'm very excited for the road pod. Should we, on some of our drives, should we record the pod there to really, really irritate our fellow companions, Sarah and Gavin?
I've thought about that, actually, because Sarah said that we should. She said that we should do a mobile podcast. So it would really just be to annoy Gavin, which I'm sure you would love to do.
Oh, absolutely. So that's good. We'll get our equipment and take the show on the road. I still need to book my flight coming there, actually, out west. I have my flight coming back from Vancouver to New York.
But I thought you said you booked it.
I said that, but I have some credit from Delta that they were giving me a hard time about applying when I was trying to book it online, so I need to call them. But I'm working on it.
Okay, yeah, just update us next podcast. I hope you can book it. This is news to me.
Yeah, we'll be fine. Don't worry. I still have a couple weeks.
Okay, yeah, we're good.
On the Nets front, there's been some updates here. It's great to have actual stuff to talk about. We had been planning to do our kind of recap of last season, top five highlights, top three lowlights. Obviously, want to have a balance in favor of the highlights. My list is ready, so that's ready to go whenever we have a few day lull period. So very excited to talk about that, and really, I think it will look fondly back on last season, especially some moments involving players that aren't on the team anymore, which I definitely want to highlight. How's your list coming along?
You know, it's getting there. I definitely, for some reason, I'm focusing more on the highlights, probably just because it was a more happy memory. But yeah, I'll look for some lowlights also.
Yeah, my highlight list is like 8 or 9 long. I actually
need
a bit. One of my lowlights actually came on your birthday when we were together.
Oh, no.
I know. The birthday was a highlight, but it was the Nets game that happened on your birthday that was the lowlight.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it was a great hang. But yes, I believe that was the double overtime loss, right?
Yeah, that was the Memphis game where we were at an improv show, and I was like convulsing in my seat as I saw the Nets blow an 8-point lead with like a minute left and Jaren Jackson Jr. getting a 4-point play.
I distinctly remember that because we weren't seated together because we got there kind of late. And like during there was like an intermission, I think we like met up in the hallway with like the other people we were with. And like the only thing you could say was like Jaren Jackson Jr. is just going off. So that actually is like a memory that's like burned into my mind.
It's a classic low light. But something that I think is more of a highlight, a new era in Nets land. Joe Tsai, obviously someone that has invested significantly in the Nets, had been a 49% owner. He's one of the co-founders of Alibaba, a former college lacrosse player, very, very interesting character. He is very close to signing a deal to buy the remaining 51% of the Nets that he doesn't already own, and talks to buy Barclays Center as well. The remaining 51%, he would buy that at $1.35 billion. So becoming sole owner of the Nets, buying that remaining piece from Mikhail Prokhorov, and the total valuation of $2.35 billion. How about this, Marcus? Most ever paid by any sports franchise. Brian Lewis of the Post had a really great article about this. How about those Nets? $2.35 billion, highest amount of money paid for any sports franchise. Pretty cool.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, just looking at the article that you referenced, the Carolina Panthers and the Houston Rockets both went for $2.2 billion. I remember the Clippers went to Steve Ballmer a few years ago now for, I think it was $2 billion. So there's been deals that are in the range of this, but for this to be like the top of the top, I think is incredible. And it makes me wonder a little bit if this was like how long this has been in the works and how much it played into Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving coming here, like if they knew something about Joe Tsai maybe buying the team eventually.
Yeah, well, I think Tsai kind of had that option to buy the entire team. That was kind of a foregone conclusion at some point. The option he had was, I think, 2 years from now. And obviously at that point, with Kyrie and KD's contracts, they might have only had 1 or 2 years left on the team, or who knows how things would have shaken out. But I think it's a really good sign that Tsai and Prokhorov decide to accelerate that and have him purchase the team outright, basically as of now. And obviously, when you have someone that is very influential in the global market, such as China, and really a big wig at Alibaba, and you have guys like KD and Kyrie that are trying to expand their brand, and a big reason of why they came here, I'm sure it's not necessarily just a coincidence. I'm sure this is something that they were very supportive of and that he wanted to do, and immediately kind of start having that full ownership now that the Nets are kind of in that next phase of where they really want to begin contending.
Yeah, definitely. And Tsai is like no stranger to sports ownership. Like I believe he owns the Liberty now. He's like made plays at other teams before. Yeah. So he's like, seems like he at least knows what he's doing, or at least is like putting on that front. So that's a good sign. I know when Prokhorov came in, there was kind of like a lot of unease and like questions about how legit everything was. He was kind of, I think, setting unrealistic expectations for the team. And so I think with Joe Tsai, who like has done this before, even though it hasn't been for a super long time, he's at least been in this now for a couple of years. And like we said before, he had that big stake beforehand anyway. So not too much should be changing. Hopefully that this just like continues the Nets on their upward trajectory.
Yep. No, absolutely. And yeah, you're right. He does own the Liberty. Of course you'd be right. But he also, he owns a couple of professional lacrosse teams, I think one in Seattle. And then he was trying to get this seed funding for another lacrosse league called the Premier Lacrosse League. So he's definitely, you know, he's someone that is a very prominent person in the sports ownership landscape. Definitely a bit entrepreneurial in his focus as well. So definitely, I think he sees a lot of potential in the Nets because, listen, this is a team that in its current iteration, in kind of the last 5 years or so since they moved from New Jersey to Brooklyn, has really taken off from a value standpoint. I mean, remember when Bruce Ratner, it was kind of so many false starts for him to sell the team. He was a terrible owner, was kind of dragging the Nets back and forth and not really giving them a concrete answer. We had heard about Brooklyn for years before it actually happened. And it kind of took Prokhorov and his leadership once he bought the team in 09 to actually get that across. So it's great to have someone that I think will be a big time advocate for the Nets moving forward and not just looking at it from a financial standpoint.
Yeah. And just to circle back to that financial standpoint, that article that we've been talking about from the Post says that the Nets and the NBA are kind of projecting that their revenue for the upcoming season is going to go up by 10-15%. And then obviously it should jump even more the following year once KD's back and they get a second star in, and maybe who knows if they make a trade or if something else happens to bring in a third guy. But the Nets are definitely on that upward trajectory. And I think Joe Tsai, who, like you said, is with Alibaba, he kind of knows when to get in on something that's hot. And it seems like the Nets are definitely hot right now.
The Nets are hot. We'll talk a bit more about the schedule later. But we're going to take a quick break, and then coming up, want to provide a postmortem on the Mikhail Prokhorov era as the team's owner. Today's show is brought to you by Locked On Fantasy Football. Fantasy football players, make sure you listen to Vinny Iyer and the Locked On Fantasy Football podcast. Our boy Vinny gives you the edge with over 20 years covering the game. Don't listen to the same stuff as everyone else. If you do that, you're just the same. We're all recycling the same ideas, same sleepers. Same bus, what have you. Get the edge from Vinny that will put you ahead on draft day and all season long. Locked On Fantasy Football on your favorite podcast provider, the Locked On Network. Okay, Marcus. Now, obviously, the Cy era is officially kind of kicked off with him as the majority owner. But let's talk about Mikhail Prokhorov. Owned the team for basically a decade. The Nets were pretty bad in that timeline. I have very, very mixed feelings. Actually, I don't even know about mixed. Mostly negative feelings about Prokey as the owner. Definitely provided a lot of entertainment. But I'd be curious for someone like yourself that kind of watched the team from afar for 9.5 years of those 10, what was your perception on the Prokey tenure in Brooklyn?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the Nets weren't great during the majority of his time owning the team. I think he himself was kind of viewed as somewhat of a joke around the league, like this like foreign owner, which is like a little bit of like a xenophobic take, but like he was like seen as like this crazy guy from Russia who was just like, oh, let's just throw money at stuff and everything will work out, which obviously did not happen, even though the Nets kind of tried that with the KG Paul Pierce trade, not necessarily throwing money, but throwing like assets just kind of out the window. But yeah, I mean, he was the first non-North American team owner in the NBA. So he like kind of blazed a trail for some guys. And I think that, like you said, the Nets did move to Brooklyn during his time. And at this tail end of his run, they're at least kind of set up for the future. How much of that was his doing? Probably not very much, but he at least didn't mess it up. So that's one thing. I think overall, I'll mostly remember him as like a somewhat unremarkable owner who it was like, oh, wow, this guy is just kind of coming out of nowhere is my biggest, I think, takeaway for him.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of came in as a hot shot. And listen, I give the guy a lot of credit in the sense that he made a hell of a return on his investment, whether that was mostly kind of luck-based, falling into it at the right time, really making a savvy investment, who knows. But he really, and definitely I think this kind of embodies a lot of the NBA owners. They're a bit more open-minded. They're more kind of, they're less conservative than when you look at the NFL owners that are kind of all fall into the same category. I think the NBA does a nice job of having a pretty diverse ownership group. But I mean, from a strategic standpoint, Prokhorov, he just was way too overzealous coming in, trying to make a splash, do things the way he did when he owned, I think he still does, own a professional team out in Russia. I think it was CSKA Moscow. I'm not 100% sure. But you can't just buy your way into things. You have to really make savvy decisions. And he was coming in just trying to get star power right away. And, you know, Billy King didn't do a good job, but also his hand was forced by Prokhorov saying, we need to get stars. We need to win now, now, now. And that's what's going to lead to really terrible trades, like giving up the pick that ended up becoming Damian Lillard for Gerald Wallace, making that KG Pierce trade, of course. Other signings, signing AK-47, who was washed at the time, even though it's not like they gave him a ton of money. Just overall, he was trying to get way too involved in the basketball operations right off the bat. And I think that never really works out for the most part. He did a much better job when he kind of realized the errors in his ways, that he needed to really let the team build from the grounds up. He took a kind of a hands-off approach once Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson were hired, made good hires in them and let them do their thing to where the team is now. But he set the franchise back for multiple years. I don't think there's any way around it.
Yeah, and I think that definitely happened. But I think to kind of like end it on like a somewhat positive note, at least the Nets did make the playoffs last year. They did sign these guys. And now it seems like with the transition to Joe Tsai that they are on the upswing. Also, I was looking at Prokhorov's like Wikipedia before this, and I had no clue that he ran for president of Russia in 2012. Yeah. And he did not do very well.
But he's just a crazy character, man. I think when he first started, all the stuff with him and his yachts and just partying all the time and saying his ridiculous promises, if we don't win a championship in 5 years, I'll get married. And then he just really came in hot. I think it's just the whole, his whole thing. I mean, this Russian guy, super, super rich, all the kind of the stuff with him politically in Russia. Him being 6'8", trying to like show the Nets drills in his first early few years as the owner of the team, all of it was just a lot, man. And I think we've seen that with both foreign owners, not to cast any stereotypes, but both foreign owners that have come into the league. Mikhail Prokhorov and Vivek Ranadive have ultimately kind of become jokes. And maybe that's the people that are attracted to buying a U.S. basketball team, or maybe it's something wrong with how the existing NBA owners are vetting these folks that are looking to buy teams. But I think there's obviously tons of good owners out there that come from overseas. But so far, the track record hasn't been great with Vivek and Prokhorov.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely guys out there like Josiah, who's coming in, was born in Taiwan. Obviously, he's like a dual citizen with Canada, too. But yeah, I think those two guys you mentioned, it might just be that, like, if like in order to be a billionaire, you have to be like kind of an insane person.
Right.
And I think that like even guys like Steve Ballmer, Mark Cuban, like I think it's more of like someone who has that much wealth as opposed to like the fact that it's like these two random guys who happen to be from other places. I think it's just that to get to that level, you have to be like legitimately somewhat insane.
And I think Prokhorov definitely fit the bill there. Yeah, obviously small sample size theater. We'll take a quick break, and then coming up, we will analyze the schedule. Finally, we know what's going to be happening this coming season, and we will pick our games that we want to highlight and any potential patterns that we're seeing from first blush of the schedule coming up next.
Support for today's show comes from Manscaped, who is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. You may have seen Manscaped on Shark Tank, and Men's Journal actually named their lawnmower 2.0 as one of the best tools in men's grooming. You can get 20% off and free shipping with promo code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. That's LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. Josh, you know, the Nets had a close shave last season in the playoffs. They got there, but they couldn't quite get over the hump. So this season, the schedule's come out. A lot of big games. I found it interesting that the Nets are on way more national TV games this year. They've got 12 on ESPN and TNT combined, plus 8 on NBA TV. And there are a ton of really good games. To me, the biggest one, though, has to be Nets at Celtics. The day before Thanksgiving, Kyrie Irving's return to Boston. There were like rumors that this was maybe going to be on Christmas Day, but they have Celtics-Raptors on that day instead, which is fine, I guess. And then the Knicks and the Nets are playing the day after on the 26th. So to me, both of those games, honestly, are like pretty huge ones. What about you? What are you looking at?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. First of all, it's great to see the Nets get that media recognition. I think it was only 2 years ago that the Nets only had one national TV game. That was an MLK Day game against the Knicks, or maybe it was three or four years ago. But to go from 1 to 20 is pretty cool. So that's awesome. I'm very excited for the national media and for fans to get a better sense of the Nets team and understand that it's not just Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant when he comes back, and really get more exposure to guys like Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie. Can we get some Rodions Karuts love? Come on.
We can.
Yeah. Obviously, that Celtics game is going to be huge. Kyrie is just going to get destroyed going back there. It will be interesting to see. I feel like he's just going to go in FU mode and could really put on a show.
Also, just quickly on that Celtics game, I did not realize at first, but it's like a home and home. So like 2 days later, they're in Barclays. So like if something, I don't think this would happen, but like if something were to happen, like a fight or something, like those two teams would be playing again 2 nights later here in New York. So that would be a huge game also, possibly.
Yeah, that will be good. Maybe I'll try to get tickets to that.
Day before my birthday, hint, hint.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's great. I'll start saving my money now, because I'm sure ticket prices will be insane. For me, there's two games in addition that I'm circling on the calendar. One, February 5th, Warriors coming to town, D'Lo's return. I think that's going to be great. I'm sure the Nets will give him a very warm reception. Tribute video in the works. What do you think, Marcus?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm expecting like a full-on standing ovation. I think he's going to get a ton of love.
Yeah, so that will be really good. I'm excited for that. And then the Nets, we can talk about this. The Nets schedule is kind of weak at the start, which is really great. I'm excited for that. I think they could really rattle off some wins right off the bat. I mean, obviously starting the season with Minnesota, but there's a bunch of games early. I mean, Knicks, Grizzlies, Pacers without Oladipo. You got Pistons. Suns are always a nice one to go up against. Bulls, Hornets, Kings. So definitely opportunity for the Nets to get off to a really good start. And Marcus, I'm sure that at some point you would want to play the old win loss loss win game that Mike Francesa would do for an MLB season.
I would love to do that.
Yeah, nothing better. So, but for me, the first kind of not test, but actually quality team that the Nets are going to be playing besides the Celtics, I'd say would really be the Raptors on December 14th. And obviously, even though they're defending champions, Raptors aren't really going to be what they were last season. That's a back-to-back. Toronto on the road, and then the Nets play Philly in Barclays. But that's kind of the first true test early season of how the Nets stack up. And I'm excited to see how they do against some Eastern Conference foes. And I think if they can at least win one in that stretch, it could be a pretty encouraging sign for them to get a top four seed this year.
Yeah, definitely. And they have some games early against like the Blazers, the Rockets, the Nuggets, the Jazz. But those are like more sporadic. And like you said, they're not against those conference opponents that they'll be, and specifically division opponents that they'll be battling with for playoff seeding. Although the Raptors probably are going to take a step back, but we'll see. Yeah, those two games are really interesting. One more that I just wanted to quickly highlight was that game at the Warriors March 12th, where it's like a very slim chance, but I guess it's possible KD could be back for that. I don't know. He's definitely going to get his ring at least, which will be cool to see. But yeah, that could be insane if he were back for that.
Yeah, no, that would be. I mean, that's insane, not only because they're playing the Warriors, but to be back by February, that would just be sick.
Well, no, it's March 12th where they're in Golden State.
Oh, right. Oh, you're right. That's my...
So it's like possible, but it seems like a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, a little bit of a long shot. And I think also early season, I want to see how the Nets are stacking up against teams that have really good wing scorers. So maybe against the Spurs, seeing how they play against DeRozan, Mavs against Luka, Heat early season, they play them. Want to see how they can contain Jimmy Butler, who's a historic Nets killer, and will definitely show up on my at least top three lowlights of the season list when we do that podcast. So just given that KD is going to be out for almost all, if not all, of this season, the one real weakness I'd say on the Nets is the lack of that wing stopper. You have to see if Garrett Temple could kind of do enough offensively to earn those minutes. Torian Prince, I think his reputation's better than his actual output on the court on the defensive side. So it'll be interesting to see how Kenny Atkinson deals with some of those teams that have wings that are more focused on getting buckets.
Definitely. But I think overall my takeaway is that the schedule seems pretty good. There's not a ton of back-to-backs. Like you said, it's a little soft at the beginning, and then at the end there's teams like Cleveland, Chicago, Milwaukee might have clinched a top seed. OKC probably will have traded Chris Paul. Dallas might be out of it. So I think there's definitely wins at the start and at the end there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's funny because they're playing Milwaukee twice at the end of this year, and they played them twice at the end of last year also, yeah. And it ended up working out pretty well for the Nets.
Yeah, and I think that same type of thing could happen again where there's guys resting.
Yeah, absolutely. We will continue to monitor and refine our analysis on the schedule. It's just great to have expectations on what the season's going to look like and start getting excited for opening night against Minnesota. We'll be back in your ears later on this week to talk through the highlights, lowlights podcast from last season. Of course, please subscribe to the podcast. Rate, review, and obviously find us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Himalaya, all the good ones, all the gems out there. There's so many people that are hosting content. And then follow us on Twitter. That would be great. We'd greatly appreciate that. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. I am at JMBass_thePodcast. The 1+1=3 of our Twitter knowledge is at Locked On Nets. Please find us there. And until next time, be well.
Bye.